हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
okay. Page 24, Adhyayana 3, Adhikarna 1, Realizations of Vyasadeva in Trance, Srila Baladeva Vidushan. So now the doubt again, the Purva Paksha. Brahman divides into Ishwara and Jiva by division of the one Brahman through Maya according to Shruti. Yat tu indro maya bhi puru rupa iyate. Brahman appears as many by his Maya. Brihat said, so he's saying he's expanded his energies, and then there's so much variety that's there, but that you don't see that in connection with the Supreme. You just see the variety. That's Maya. That's the meaning. But their taking is, no, Brahman becomes all these different. That's the many. They're taking it as, you know, they'll say it's illusion. They don't understand the illusion's cause because of not seeing it in connection with the Supreme. They're taking it that the Supreme has become the Ishwara and the Jivas. Does that make sense?
I don't understand the distinction between Brahman and Ishwara.
Brahman means it's what's beyond the transcendental. Then, under the influence of Maya, in other words, covered by, when Brahman becomes covered by Maya, then you get two aspects. Mm-hmm. One is because Maya then has two energies, the jnana shakti and the ajnana shakti, mm-hmm. right, or ignorance. So that portion of Brahman covered by jnana or knowledge becomes Ishwara. And that portion of Brahman that becomes covered by ignorance or avidya, that becomes the jiva. That's their idea. So they're taking it that that's the many. Right? Rather than the many comes up is that we see so many things that aren't connected to the Lord. Therefore, we're seeing a variety of Maya. Right? So, you understand, they're so close, but at the same time, they're so far away. You know? That's
90 different vision.
Yes, it's a different vision. Why? Because they want to have it that nothingness is the supreme. They don't appreciate the personal aspect. Because to understand the proper position, you have to appreciate the person. The personal aspect. And then because of that, then the person has energies and expands. So, in any case, it's the difference is, do they accept that Brahman has energies or not? And so then, the difficulty comes up is, this is Brahma Parinamavad. Means Brahman has transformed. But technically that's against their philosophy, since Brahman is unchangeable. And Brahman being the only existence, then where does Maya come from? Right? So that's the difficulty, is that they claim they're monist, but they're actually not. So then, you know, it's just like we're saying, like in the modern religions, they'll say, there's only God. He's the supreme. But the devil can function separate from God with no control by God. So that means there's two Ishwaras. There's two supremes. Right? And then you throw in, you know, how you say, Paulinism, then they throw in the Holy Ghost also. Right? You know, they say, you know, it's just, you know, everybody gets tossed in. You know, plus they have the devil, right? You know, so it's just, you know, it just gets more and more. So this idea that it's only Krishna, but at the same time that doesn't mean that there's not individuality and variety. This is something that can't be understood by mundane logic. So they're trying to say that the impersonal is the supreme, and also in this way is they're maintaining their position as Ishwar, as the controller. Right? It means on the material platform they could not control and enjoy. So they're going for the spiritual platform that now I can control and enjoy because now I become God. You know? Is that, you know, it doesn't make sense.
But it is attractive.
Huh?
It is attractive.
It is attractive, yes, of course. You know, you know, you can't drive your car because you just have no qualifications. But by meditation, I'll be a Formula One racer. I mean, it's people are going to go for it, you know. I can't carry a tune in a bucket, but, you know, but by meditation I can become the greatest, you know, international, you know, singing superstar.
That's called karaoke.
Huh? Yeah, that's called karaoke. So it's the same thing.
The previous one calls computer games.
Computer games. Yeah, yeah, that's true. See, so it's the same thing as you can't do it. So then you come up with this other way that now you are. So so you see it's not that it's just something connected to them. It's impersonalism. So that's just pervading everything. You're either personalist or you're an impersonalist. It's not something else. You know? So the aspect of the supreme, so they don't mind that there's a supreme, it's just it becomes a problem that the supreme's not yourself. So if it's not yourself, then, you know, something impersonal is okay. But then you have to be that. Right? You are that. Right? So then, because they have a form, they are walking, talking, doing all the stuff that's in there, then they want to be the best of that. Right? So then that's Ishwara. So now that they have knowledge, they'll count themselves in the same position as Ishwara. So by their philosophy, they become God. And then after leaving, you know, this body and merging into Brahman, then you're again God. Somehow or another, the one drop is expanded to be the whole thing. How that works, it doesn't make any sense either. But because it's not about making sense, it's about the subjective pleasing of the living entity's desire to control and enjoy. Right? You just present it that way. You know, it's just like, let's say, you've done something wrong. And I point it out, right? So the natural position would be that you notice what's wrong and then you would acknowledge that or, you know, in some way ask, it would work out that it's understood what's the standard. But let's say in a contemporary environment, you've done something wrong, I point it out, you can now take the position of the victim and claim how I am dealing with you badly. Completely distract the conversation from that you've done something wrong. It doesn't count anymore because I've supposedly done something wrong. So somehow or another, in this way, two wrongs makes you right. You know, it's a new philosophy, right?
Huh? Mathematics.
Yes, it's mathematics. Yes. Yes. See, very scientific. So this is all that's happening, is that it's the same principle that's going on.
So Maharaj, modern is basically just keeping on the authority, not accepting the authority. Modern, contemporary.
Yes, yeah, so not accepting authority. So that way they're being authority. But everybody's not accepting authority, ultimately. It means we're accepting authority if we see that that position of authority means it's natural to accept authority. But we are interested in accepting authority as long as we get the benefits that should come from accepting authority.
Mm-hmm.
But when we don't get the benefits of accepting authority, then the tendency is to reject authority.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's just whatever we feel like.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like that. Yeah.
So the more we become like, you know, impersonal, naturally the more like, you know, we enter into a virtual
reality. Yeah. Just that before they could do it without all these technical stuff. And so now that they could, because before they could meditate and focus and use their logic and intelligence, so they didn't require it. But now they can't, so then they use the technology to get the same effect. So that's the thing, is there's nothing new. We'll say, oh, it's new. It's accomplishing the same thing. Okay? That's the whole point. If it's accomplishing the same thing, what's the difference? That's all. See? So, here's that. They're saying in here, then they're making the mistake that appears as many by his maya. Right? The Lord, then you think that he's many by being covered by illusion. But you're not. But the point is if you remove the illusion, you understand it's the Lord through his energies has become everything. Right? But they're taking it that, no, the Brahman, the transcendental position, is covered. And because of being covered, now he's become many. And that's separate from the transcendental position. While in Krishna, he's still in the transcendental position. He's still in control of his energies. That's Vyasadeva's realization, that Krishna is transcendental, but he's still in control of Maya. That's why you see constantly that the acharyas are always pointing out how Krishna is transcendental. Because otherwise, we'll just think, oh, he's just one of us. Yes?
It's very interesting that we say it's one.
Right.
Then we say it's two.
Right.
Then we say it's three.
Yes.
But then yesterday, it was, you know, in terms of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu in five features. So before we understand him in five features, it's not complete.
Yes.
So for many devotees, it's, you know, it's not easy to grasp this kind of philosophy.
Yeah, but it's worth endeavoring for, even if you can't grasp it. Point is by devotional service, then Krishna will reveal. It's just that, generally speaking, for many, they don't apply themselves in these areas. And so Krishna's not reciprocating these areas. At the same time, as those who are rendering devotional service are fully absorbed, when they hear it, it makes sense, so it doesn't matter, because they already have by Krishna's grace, they already appreciate it, though they may not have looked at it that way, but when you mention it, it makes sense. But for many, is that they're applying the intelligence in other areas, especially if they're taking a position of being practical, you know, then Krishna is going to be practical in that area that they apply themselves. He'll reciprocate there. And so then understanding these things is they're not using their mechanical abilities to apply it in these areas. You know, so it's just a matter of Krishna revealing. If one has faith, then it does. Because the acharyas are saying, so why not? Does that make sense? Because you see, it's just an unfolding. It means the Lord is one, but then he has his, you know, how you say, expansion and incarnation. So in that way, he's three. And then there's the Lord and his energy. But the energy also has the jivas. Right? So you can take it as just Krishna and his Swarup Shakti. And his energy is part of him, so he's one. Then he's the Swarup Shakti. Then he expands, the Swarup Shakti expands. So that way you get from one to three to five. Okay. And then you have within the one, there's three features. Lord Chaitanya and three features. So, you know, the different moods. Yes? Yeah.
So this, within the one about the Lord, there are three features. It's mainly only the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, especially the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's aspect of being Swayam Bhagavan.
Yes.
Only the Gaudiya Vaishnavas can understand.
Well, really understand these subtleties. It means there is connections. Like Sri Bhu and Nila will be Radharani, Lalita, and Vishaka. And so there are these things. But so the positions they'll understand. But the difference in the mood, the flavor, that it will be more rare to find someone who understands. You may get one or two here and there. But the point is that they're individuals who have that realization. Right? But in their line, it doesn't matter. They may be more involved in these subtler aspects, because for most, there's just Lakshmi and Narayan. So Bhu and Nila don't feature so much. But at the same time as those that can appreciate, then they'll appreciate the broadness of that. And then the particular associates, you know, you have Vishwakshena, you have this, that they can appreciate that broader aspect. So they're able to go deeper into these things. As we mentioned, you know, from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you have the general Vaikuntha Vasis who just accept the Lord in his position and are in reverence, and that's all the more they can appreciate. And in that environment, they don't have to appreciate more because they won't be exposed to anything more. Right? But then when Gopa Kumar comes, then by his dealing in a different mood, then that group couldn't understand it. So for them, it's wrong. And it's wrong in the context that it's not in line with maintaining that mood of awe and reverence to the Lord. Right? That they're having. So from their perspective, you can say it won't follow the path of devotion they have. But at the same time, then there's a group who can appreciate that there are different flavors and moods, but they have theirs that they're there. And so then they're telling Gopu Kumar, therefore just follow the rules, because those who can't appreciate anything other than the specifics that they're following, then they get disturbed. And then so therefore then their service doesn't go so well. So just for them, you do like this. But otherwise, they can appreciate that there may be some variety. You know, but still it's just within, it's because God's great, then there may be some variety. But it's still not on the platform as we see like Narad Muni, who appreciates beyond into the other realms and the rasas and the flavors and all that. But it's still an expansion of that, that Narayan's great, therefore has all these aspects. Is that make sense? Yeah, so that's more rare. But you do get them. It's not that you won't find them. But it's just very rare. And even those that don't generally have the realization, if you discuss it nicely, they may come up to appreciate, have an understanding of it. Though it's not an area of interest, but at least they understand it and will consider it bona fide and not harass. Okay. So, yeah. Okay. Divided by vidya, Ishvara, a huge portion, appears. Divided by avidya, a small portion, the jiva, appears. Right? So then the vidya being superior to avidya, therefore you get a bigger portion as Ishvara and a smaller, so the jivas end up so small because it's inferior. But the problem is they're counting themselves as Ishvara because they have vidya, but they're still small like a jiva. But
potatoes. Sure. More potatoes is better than less. That's the idea, is the size.
Yeah, you can see in this that the one is, you can see the nature of the jiva, that personal and all these, that there is value systems and all that. But at the same time, as you see, they're impersonalism because they don't actually apply it properly. Because if you're personal, then you have to apply it to the person. If you're impersonal, you just arrange it. It doesn't matter if it's correct for people. You know, it's just like, let's say, I set up on, let's say, the metro platform, you know, an arrangement for a formal dinner. Right? For the platform, it doesn't matter. For the train, it doesn't matter. You know, for the setup, it doesn't matter. But as soon as you bring people in, now it matters. So that's the whole thing, is the impersonalists, they can come up with all kinds of strange, you know, things, because not being personal, it doesn't matter. So that's why you'll see they tend to be a bit, they'll follow the rules nicely. You meet, you know, smart, especially, like, that they'll follow the rules nicely, but at the same time they're very dry, they're very mechanical, because they don't understand that personal aspect. But at the same time, being per people, they like or don't like or this or that. You know, saying, so that's the point, is that the Vedic, then when you have the understanding, as Vyasa Dev has understood from Narada, then then you can accommodate all these mentalities, and they have their position. But at the same time, as those mentalities that are wrong, then have to be adjusted. But the points, then they go into their natural position, like the Lord being many, then due to Maya, then comes into its natural thing. They're using the perverted, because also we have that the one becomes many from that nityo nityanam. Right? He becomes many. He had that desire, but then because it's personal. So through his energies, he's expanding and creating all this. So his energies being non-different, it's him. But at the same time, as conscious entities, there's a difference. Okay. So it's subtle, because they're trying to use mundane intelligence, so they can't understand this. So it's not a matter of, oh no, but if you explain it, they'll understand. No, they'll never understand. It's just absolutely won't understand. It's not possible. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was, at his time, the greatest scholar. He could not understand. When Lord Chaitanya explained the proper Vedanta philosophy, then all these shlokas he knows, because he'll know unlimited shlokas, now they had meaning. Otherwise, before he wondered, what does this shloka mean? He knows it. So all the shlokas about Lord Chaitanya's appearance and what he'll do, and all, he knew all the shlokas. But they didn't mean anything to him. But then after Lord Chaitanya explained, now he gets the understanding. Because of his service, now it's revealed, now he can understand. So that's the point, is that it's an illusion to think by intelligence I will make it happen. Or by good work I'll make it happen. Or by prosperity. Right? So that's the thing. By dharma, artha, kama, or moksha, you can't realize the Lord. But you can engage dharma, artha, kama, moksha in the Lord's service, and that way liberate yourself. It won't give you prema, but it'll get you out of the material world. It's just like nama bas, your chant. It will get you out of the material world. It won't give you prema. Only shuddha nama will give you prema. Right? So that's why we're worried about removing, you know, all the, you know, offenses and you know, being properly focused. Because then we can develop prema. But even without that, it will give you liberation. Just as a byproduct. Right? So on the mundane platform, that's so incredibly fantastic, they just don't believe it. It means they're working so hard trying to understand, and then this kid is chanting and he's liberated. You know, it doesn't make sense. It annoys them. They can't, their ego won't allow them to digest it. You know, as according to their own philosophy, they're covered by avidya, and therefore they're a jiva, and so therefore they have false ego. Okay, this is similar to the sky being covered by a pot and a small cup. Right, so now they even have to break it down. Generally they just say pot, but now they have to have a pot and a small cup. Yata hyayam jyotir atma vivasvan apo bhitva bahu daiko nu gacchan upadina kriyate beda rupo devak Deva kshetre shvevam ajo yam atma. Just as the light, just as the one light of the sun, divided by water, becomes many, the unborn atma is made into many forms by upadis in various bodies. So this is So in here it's using both philosophies, reflection and. What is it?
Bifurcation.
Okay. And pratibimba is?
Pratibimba is reflection.
Reflection. And the other one?
Paricheda.
Okay. So he's given both of them here. Like that. Because it seems you have that, but the point is, even though they may be in one school, they'll use either school to win an argument. That's all.
Actually, this verses, I think, from the Upanishad. Madhvacharya quote is to explain how the jiva is illusioned to think that, you know, he's identified with the body.
Yes. Means it's all very close, but it's just that, you know, it's not close enough. So that's the thing, is that when we say razor's edge, it has to be on the razor's edge. So they get close, Because just off the razor's edge, that's where the Mayavad philosophy starts. So that means that portion will look very close. I mean, you go farther away, it definitely looks very strange. But as you get close, it's similar. But there's something in there that's just gone wrong. That's the thing. Everything is right, but there's just this little something wrong. You know what I'm saying? You know, Haishe comes out for the contest and all that. They read the names, and now she's Miss Universe and all that. And as she turns to the crowd and smiles, you know, there's this little, very nicely trimmed pencil mustache. It's close, but something's just not quite right. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that they get close, but they don't make it.
What is missing in the parampara?
Is missing his parampara. That's why you see Vyasadeva, he's in the parampara, but he's getting the realization through that instruction. So he's in parampara, he's heard instruction, but he hadn't taken it to this point. Because for the others to deal with this, then there's a lot of technicalities they go through, because they'll use the grammar, they'll use the logic, they'll use all to the points and argue. For us, it's just the simultaneous one and difference. It does it. So even without using the technicalities, we can explain how it's wrong. Then if you know all the grammar and all that, great, then you can make it even more impressive. But for nowadays, most people, they don't know either, so it doesn't matter. Like I mentioned, Atmatattva once, he was using, I think it's Tattva Sutras. That's the one with 50 sutras?
Yeah.
Yes. So it's 50 sutras written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in five categories, like Achit Ishwara, Sadhana, Sadhya. And he gave 10 sutras on each to explain. So we were working with it at the time. And so then Atmatattva went south for some work, and he met an actually a Jaimini Sutra philosopher. Because nowadays hardly anybody follows a specific school, but this guy was, you know, straight just Jaimini. And so then they started talking and all that. And whatever was said, and Atmatattva had something to say, this and that, but he wasn't quoting sutras, he was just saying. And after some time, the Jaimini Wali, he said, "What sutras are you using?" Because he could see it was consistent and exact. It had a framework. Like that. So he asked. But he only met one guy like that. You know, from these other schools. Otherwise, they're all just, a hodgepodge of whatever they like. You know, like that. You know, it's a hodgepodge, and then after that, you know, you grow the beard, you do all those things, and you wear the robes, but and the beads, but then you have to do something different, so they wear a hat. You know, then you understand they wear those stocking hats? That's I don't know why. They already have so much hair, their head would be so hot, right? But whatever, they like it.
The new fashion is to wear the pagri.
Oh, pagris, now they've gone back to pagris. Okay, because a long time ago
they... Famous guy wearing a pagri.
Okay, yeah, because before they used to wear the pagris, but now they... Pagri, turbans. They used to wear turbans a long time ago. Then somehow or another, one of them changed into that. I think Osho did, and one other guy. And also that the politician in South, the DMK, Waller, with the glasses. He always wore sunglasses and wore this, like, Russian hat. Like that. You know, you have to do something.
MGR.
Yes, MGR. Okay, the divisions of Ishwara and Jiva is said to take place by a reflection of Brahman, as described above. The reflection in Vidya is Ishwara. The reflection in Avidya is the Jiva. This is similar to a reflection of the sun in a lake or in a pot. This is Shankara's explanation. Right, so, in other words, he gives both. But then some will take this one, some will take that one. You know, it's like a... What was it? Somebody was the pot, and somebody else was the shoe or something. You know, in following the Messiah. No. You don't know that one? No. Right, so. Yeah. So there's reflection. But that means then there has to be, the Brahman of course is there, but that means then if Brahman is all pervading, that means it's pervading the illusion also, or the Maya also. So then how would it reflect off itself? So that means that that Maya is something separate from Brahman. That means there's an area that Brahman doesn't pervade. So how is Brahman all pervading? So it doesn't make sense. No? If Brahman's all pervading, there's no space for Maya.
What about those pops?
No, that's the whole thing. Is that all? What about the pots? But they're empty pots. So, yeah, I mean, you have the one, the empty pot with the sky, and then you have the water in the pots, and then you have the reflection. So it's all, yeah. Uttara, to refute this view, the author speaks this anucheda, this next one. He states that the distinction of Ishwara and Jiva does not take place by this means.
Okay. This anucheda he just mentioned, next anucheda he elaborates.
Okay. Preeti, after stating the fallacies in the Mayavad philosophy in the current anucheda, Srila Jiva Goswami thoroughly refutes the theories of Parichedavad and Pratibimbavad in the next anucheda. Next means after 37.
37.
Or 37 itself.
Actually, it has to go to the next page. The anucheda 37 has to go to the next page.
Oh, the number.
Number, yeah.
Just after 37, yeah. Okay, so this is anucheda 37. So this is Jiva Goswami. If Brahman has its real nature, as its real nature, the quality of not being subjected to anything else, it is impossible for Brahman, not subject to anything, to be subjected to bifurcation by upadis. Right? That which is without qualities cannot be subject to reflection, because you can only reflect a quality. So that's the thing. They'll say the qualities are upadis, so therefore being subject to that, but it's not subject to anything. Right? So there's nothing else other than it existing. So how would this happen? So that's why you see Shankar is so clever. That's what I mentioned before. He's very cunning. That he's taken these points and sold them that this is all happening when it can't happen. So to do that, because it's not a Vedic philosophy, because it doesn't make sense. So it's Buddhist philosophy. You know, that's how they work. And so for them to work, that's fine, because they're not accepting the Shastra anyway, so they can come up with all kinds of, you know, wild stuff.
And also when they say reflection, so something that is personal and has a form can be reflected, and that which is impersonal and is formless, according to their theory, how will that get reflected?
Yes.
I'm not clear whose upadis they're talking about, subjected to whose upadis?
Maya. Because you have Maya, just like we'll say, because we have the Vedic. See, is they're taking things from the Upanishads,
right,
and from the Vedanta, is that you have the spiritual world that's reflected in the material world, and that's the realm of Maya, right? And so then the Jivas are there, they have their Upadis and all those things. So they're taking that, but now they're laying on that their interpretation. So the point is they're taking that so this position that there's this time and space element. You know, because it's being explained in time and space here. So then, for us to understand, so then seeing this, then, you know, we get it's an analogy, so it's as close as possible. Though there is no time and space, so therefore, you know, it wouldn't be as we're imagining it. But they're leaving the point of time and space in place to explain the transcendental, but not understanding that in so doing, negating their own philosophy and stuff. So then you'll have Brahman on one side and Maya on the other. And so then Brahman is what's reflected. Right? And so then that Brahman taking on that, then it becomes absorbed in that and they take on the quality. Right? So now if we look at it technically, means according to our understanding, you'll see some interesting little parallel here. Now, there is a point at which there is this transformation, right? In the creation, then Mahavishnu glances at Maya. And then that glance is Shiva, right? So now, that part that enters, that becomes Shambhu. That part that reflects back, that's Sadashiva.
Yeah.
So Sadashiva is transcendental, Shambhu's not.
Right.
What is the deity of, who is the deity of the impersonalists?
Shiva.
So actually, they're only catching this little bit. Because you have to, you can only work with something that you already know. You can vary that. You know, like I remember one devotee was saying, there's nothing new. You can't imagine anything beyond what's here. He says, what if there's, one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater, like that. But the point is all those are taken from elements that you've seen. People have eyes, and so then there's one eye. But, we've seen things flying, so it's flying. We've seen the color purple, and that. Does that make sense? We've seen, animals with horns, but it only has one. And we've seen things eating things. And we've even heard of people eating people, cannibals. And so we put that all together. It's nothing new. It's just maybe a new arrangement. But it's not, the elements aren't new. There's only 24 elements. You can't come up with something else outside of that.
And also, Brihat Bhagavatam, that like when it goes to the level of Maya's, the last covering, he sees all the combinations which he never saw in the creation.
Oh, it means combinations that you could have.
You could have.
Okay.
That's why he spent some time there before.
Yeah, so whatever combinations you can get are already there in the primary creation. Anything possible. So that's why in the universal form it has all the elements there, and then according to our karma, then we pull those elements together. You have karma for a particular kind of nose, a head, and ear, and hair, and color, and all these things. All that combination at the finest detail, that's by your karma. All those are then pulled from the universal form, and then put together as the particular body, the particular situation, and everything that one's in. And as soon as one dies, it just goes back to those places. Because they're eternal. So they don't really require the time and space, we're saying, just to give the example. And so then all these things come up. So that's why people can remember and this and that. Because the person gives a particular experience. But that experience is not the jiva. Right? It's Krishna, because he's the life force within those 24 elements. The jiva being present, then the life force will be there. But when it's time for the jiva to go, the life force leaves. So Krishna's in control of the life force. So the experience of that living entity is coming from the universal form. That's why in thinking about it, you can't, even though it's in the past, you can still get an experience. But the point is, as far as manifestation goes, it's gone. But the universal form, being the Lord, then is still present, so you can still get that experience. But it will give a flavor of past, of separation, and it's controlled by ignorance. Does that make sense? On the mundane platform. Yeah. So those technical points like that, that's what's going on. So it's just a combination of everything's already there. So in Pradhan, that's where Mohini is, Devi and stuff. So then everything is already there, what could possibly be. And so it's a particular time, place, and certain things are manifest. Like there's animals that were manifest in other ages that you don't see now. Like on the temples, those lions with the elephant noses. Those are standard animals in the Tri Yuga, just not in Kali Yuga. Yeah. So.
One of the Jagannath shows that how Jagannath is different from like one devotee shows a form which has like peacock head and elephant leg.
Yeah, no, there's all kinds of form. You see sometimes that on these what do you see them? Generally on columns and stuff like that in south, it'll be these animals that are all these different combinations. Like Surabhi Devi, the original, the deity Surabhi, she has peacock wings and a peacock tail. Huh? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like that. Okay. She also has a cow tail, but so it's just a matter of what she wants to manifest. But she has all that. You see pictures of her like that. Not so often. They're older pictures. So you have all these, yeah, those things that are all these different combinations of animals. Like that. So they're there. That which is without qualities cannot be subject to reflection, because it's a quality that's being reflected. So if there's no qualities in Brahman, how can it be reflected? Right? Just taking, we're not even discussing where Maya came from. Just that they're saying is reflection, but if there's no qualities, what's to reflect? Since something without qualities can have no relationship to upadis, right? Because it's the upadi that's reflected. That which is all-pervading cannot be subject to reflection, because that means the object is in one place, the reflection is another. But if it's all-pervading, where's the reflection? It can't be. Right? Since it cannot be differentiated into object and reflection, since it extends everywhere as one entity. That which is without limbs, having no form, cannot be subject to reflection because it is invisible. Right? Because that's the point of no limbs, no form, that's the upadis. Right? A portion of light within the sky, interrupted by an upadi, becomes a reflection. The sky itself cannot be seen as a reflection. Right? So the portion of light is already there. That means Brahman has to be producing light. That means there's energies. Because the sky itself is not seen in the reflection. Can you, if you hold up a mirror, can you see space? Because it's also the mirror. The space that the mirror takes up is also space. So you can't reflect space.
Yes. So what does it mean? So that's how they whoever is refuting their argument?
Yes, means this is now Jiva Goswami speaking.
So they say that, these guys say that Brahman is the reflection of the upadis, and we say that because it's interrupted by an upadi, it cannot reflect?
No. We're saying here is that the point is being made, unless there is already upadis within an object, you can't get a reflection. So since Brahman has no, no upadis, that means it's invisible. How do you get a reflection of something invisible? There's nothing to reflect, if we're talking about their philosophy. Because they're not accepting the Shakti Parinama Bhava. Right? It's either Brahman itself is transforming, so that's bogus. So then from that, then I think that's where you get the... Because that was the original. Right? So is it? So the Pari... What is it? Pari Cheda was the original. But then the Pati Bimba comes up because... Then Paricheda is defeated. So then they come up Pratibimba. You know, it's that, okay, it's a reflection. You say it's a transforms. No, okay, it's reflected. So all these things come up because, you know, people would have been arguing with it during the life of Shankara. So he works them all in. Okay. So he's been empowered to do this so he can impress people. But then the Acharyas have been empowered to unimpress people with that philosophy and bring them to Vaishnavism. Okay.
There is more fun to it, like, he adds the concept of imposition, adhyasa.
Means
even
Jiva
further complimenting, no, Shankara.
Oh, okay.
That will be discussed and defeated later.
Okay, that'll come up.
We just got a glimpse.
Okay, so then it just keeps going. Yeah, it means you defeat this one, he's got the next one, the next one. You know, it's just like arguments on why the teenager needs the car tonight. He'll come up and say, and then you'll defeat it, then he'll have another one. He'll just keep on going. like that, you know, because there's desire, there's mundane.
So the structure is just like Vedanta Sutta, more or less?
What's of the
no.
Sandarbhas, basically. But you see, is that it has the Vaishnava explanation around, then it becomes more easily understood. That's what we saw before as we were doing the Vedanta Sutra without all that. So it's hard to understand. As soon as we added that, then it became, we could catch it. But you see, is that he's also talking, he's going through this basically like the, because it's the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, but he's categorized it basically according to Dasamuru. So then the means, this is tattva, so this is the praman. It's establishing the authority of scripture. And in doing so, just the authority of you know, all these things, and so defeating whatever is going to get in the way. Then in Bhagavat Sandarbha, then he's showing that Brahman is actually just the effulgence of Bhagavan. So it's not you don't study Brahman on its own, you study Brahman in connection with Bhagavan.
And all the Brahma Sutras are pointed out and mentioned and addressed there mostly.
Yeah, so it clears any doubt like that. Then Paramatma Sandarbha will be about Paramatma and his position as the Supreme Lord, and you know, as the like that. And then Krishna Sandarbha will be about Krishna as a person, as Bhagavan. So you're basically addressing Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan as the, you know, the Lord, you know, the unequaled Lord, then the Lord with energies, and then Lord with rasa. Right? And then in that, he'll also describe the jivas, the material energy, and all that. Right? Then in Bhakti Sandarbha, that will be Abhideya. And in Priti Sandarbha, that will be Prayojana, or Prema. So that's how he sees Bhakti. He's just describing the philosophy as he's been given it by Lord Chaitanya and his seniors, Rupa and Sanatana. So now we see Bhaktivedanta Thakur then studying this, is then seeing that Lord Chaitanya gives the philosophy in these 10 categories as Dasamuru. So he brings that to the forefront. Though the Sandarbhas are written according to Dasamuru. Is that... Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan, Parichetavad, refuted. So this is, Paricheta means the transformation.
Bifurcation.
Okay, so that means the empty pot philosophy.
What divides the air?
The pot divides the air. So this one makes the most noise. Right? Okay. This Anucheta explains why the theory is illogical. The proposal concerning dividing Brahman is first refuted in the first sentence. Right? If Brahman has its real nature, the quality of not being subject to anything else, right? If that's the nature that they describe, it is impossible for Brahman, not subject to anything, to be subjected to bifurcation by upadis. Right? You can't bifurcate it if it has nothing to bifurcate. There's no upadis. Because it's unlimited, so it's there is no quality. There is like this. So therefore, what can you bifurcate? If you have unlimitedness, how do you bifurcate that? Because even if you made it into two, each one would be unlimited. So what would be the difference? Okay. So where do you divide unlimited? In the middle, yeah.
Just like. There's a circle, and in the center you put a point, it's not dividing it in any way.
Yes.
Put a small point in the center, it's not dividing it in any way because it's very huge.
Yes.
Try to draw the line till one end to another end.
Yes. Yes. And so then, but what do you draw on?
Yeah, that's...
You know, how are you defining? How are you...
There are no coordinates.
Yeah, because like they said, if it's just a dot, it doesn't divide it. So if you're taking unlimited, eternalness, you can't bifurcate it because you can't make a line that's from one side to the other because you have to say it has an upadi or has a, you know, a definition. You can that to be able to divide it. You have to have something that you can actually get to both sides of to divide. If there's something unlimited, it's not it's not divisible. And as you mentioned, you put a dot in the center of the circle, it doesn't divide it. You know, put the dot anywhere, it doesn't divide it.
So then according to their theory, Maya is unlimited, and that's the reason why she's able to do so.
But if she's unlimited and the Lord's unlimited and he's all-pervading, how will that work? Because it only works as if one stands one side and the other stands the other side. Because they're using a reflection that we are taking from a mirror. Because they're going to use the pots. That means the sun's in one place, the pot's in another. And so therefore, but if they're in the same place, is there a reflection? If we put you inside the mirror, is there a reflection? Yeah. So no, it won't work. Their philosophy is untenable. It's just that because of mundane desire, it becomes tenable. To them. And it's just like, let us say, have we had the experience where we have someone we know, and they want something, and they have a plan, and by hearing the plan, you know it's not going to work. And it doesn't matter what you say, they're not going to buy it. But only after they try it, then they come back and go, hey, that didn't work.
What should you say now? I told you.
So that's the whole thing, is that you can't convince them because they don't want to be... You can only wake up a sleeping person. Yes.
I think it's not mentioned here, but Ramanujacharya also argues on the point that the analogy itself has a fallacy. Because in the analogy of being a pot, which is something different from the air. But in Brahman, everything is Brahman. So the pot is also Brahman. So why you're not bringing anything else to divide it?
Yeah, it's the same Brahman. Entity. Brahman with Brahman. If you're dividing Brahman with Brahman,
how can it divide it? So?
Yeah. Well, these are very clever, very good arguments.
If Brahma has variegated in its qualities or different varieties, then can it be divided?
Means it has energies. The energies can be divided. But Brahman can't. One always has to understand that Shakti Parinamavad means that the energies transform, not Brahman. Yeah? If Brahman exists as a real object without an unreal upadhi of ignorance, such as mistaking a rope for a snake, it is impossible for Brahman, which is not the object of any action, to be the object of division. Right? Because there's nothing there's nothing there to contemplate. So you can't divide something that's, not perceivable. Right? You have to have an object. It means you're in one place, it's in another. So the subject can therefore apply something to an object. So that's the problem. They've already added in time and space. So they're bringing Brahman under the laws of time and space. So they're not dealing with the transcendental position.
Agrihyo nahi grihyate.
Brahman, which is imperceptible, cannot be perceived. So they're trying to perceive it in this way. And then say there's a reflection. And then they can see the reflection and all that. But if Brahman is being reflected, even if you're looking at it, even if Brahman is reflected, the point is since Brahman's inconceivable, the reflection also would be inconceivable. Right? Yeah, so it just doesn't work. But they add time and space. They add upadis. And therefore, then they're able to make it look like it works. But it's not a transcendental philosophy then. Because Brahman has to be beyond upadis. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3.9.26. So that's the Agrihyo, right? It should also be understood that Ishwara and Jiva cannot be parts of severed Brahman, separated by real upadis, like a chisel which cuts stone, since Brahman cannot be cut and is understood to be one continuous entity. So, being one continuous entity, you can't get a reflection, you can't get a part, you can't get anything like this. This would mean that Ishwara and Jiva have a beginning, since bifurcation is a process of cutting one entity into two or three. You know, so then when you do that, then you have to have time. And then where did time come from? You know, so it just gets more and more complicated. You know, it's like something comes up and you kind of tell a white lie. Right? And then people go out, then you have to keep, and it gets more and more complicated. It just keeps,
snowballing.
Yes, snowballs. Yeah, so it just completely gets insane.
But this philosophy, only people like Gyanis, they indulge in it, because if you have to work, you don't have time for all that.
No, it means that this degree, but the common person will accept it because they don't think, and it makes sense, because the karmi is the into, I'm the controller and enjoy it. And this is a philosophy saying that you're controller and enjoy it. So they'll buy it. So you'll see, like in India, most people are karmis, but philosophically they're all impersonalists. They don't have a problem, because in this they don't have a problem that, you know, Ishwara is there and is superior, and so you have to focus somewhere, so you worship like that. They don't have a problem with that, because they just, like you said, don't think. But when they come in contact with the devotees, because of the devotion and because of activities, then they're inclined towards bhakti. And then by the association of devotees, they get purified, and then they actually understand and have faith in bhakti, and they give up that kind of impersonal tendency. And then unfortunately, the Mayavadis also see that bhakti works for the general mass, and so then they preach it also. Okay. But they always preach it as something lower. Yes.
Generally, there is one God, and then like the impersonalist acts that there is one supreme entity, and then as generally we preach that one supreme entity is Krishna. Then there are a lot of people making noise, why you are dividing Hinduism, because there are many gods, there is not only Krishna. It's like you go this way, then they jump into the other.
Yeah, it's just who they are you talking to. Because then they'll just say, oh, but they're all one, it doesn't matter. So then it's just a matter of which one you like, you know. So that's where it come up. So that's why it's impersonalism. Covered like that. Well, in the West, it's just straight impersonalism. Voidism. It's just, that's the difficulty, is that you either have the Vaishnav position or you have impersonalism. And if you're not basing it on the Vedic, then you get voidism. Right? Because Mayavad philosophy is voidism based on the Veda. If you remove the Veda, you just get voidism. But, yes.
How it's voidism? Because they speak
it's
about
Buddhist.
How Mayavadi is voidism?
Where does their philosophy come from?
Veda?
No, they use it on that, but who have you converted?
Buddhists.
Yeah. So, what are we trying to get the Buddhists to accept?
Vedas.
Yes, because they need authority. Yes.
Like the Vaishnava Acharyas mentioned, if we make the shunya, the word shunya, if they say it is Brahman, then there is no difference between voidism and impersonalism. Because all the attributes of shunya is given to Brahman by the impersonalist.
Yes.
And asat, which the Buddhists call, if you make it maya.
Okay, so they just bring it across like that. Because
yeah.
Even in the Buddhist, you see the means you don't have pure Buddhism, but the it's mixed with the Tantra, and so they always have Maya, Shiva, and Tan. Then you can explain things.
The original Buddhism, they have these two words, Shunya and Asat. Material world is Asat, and ultimately Shunya.
So they've just taken Shunya and made it Sat.
Shunya to Brahman, yeah.
Yeah.
And
so
then
that's
Asat as Maya.
Yeah. And then they divide the how you say, the asad into jnana and agyana. So it's just cleverly doing. So it means who's doing this? Lord Shiva. And then, so he has the intelligence to do this. You know, being the Lord of ignorance, he knows how to keep people in ignorance. And he's empowered by Krishna to do it. So to say. But these philosophies are always there. They're all part of the material distraction that living entity can get into. So they're not new. It's just that they're brought forward and made, you know, as it made inspiring. Okay.
in this section, there is a name of upadi. So what is the definition here?
How would they be defining upadi?
Identity.
It just means that quality is how you can identify something. You know? Yes, designations. Yes, that would be a good thing. Yeah, designations, because then with those designations it gets an identity.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing, they say it's a false identity. Because
yeah.
It's coming from the designations.
So there is
but, sorry?
There is real upadi and false upadi.
Yeah, it means the point is, as Krishna, his energies and all that, then they have the designations. But the point is it's all connected to him. But when we use upadi, generally it's a negative term, as designations, meaning that which is separated from the Lord. So it means it's what's in ignorance. So then in that case, then why would they be using upadis in the context of jnana? You know, so that doesn't make sense, because upadis are generally used in the context of ignorance. But at the same time, as you have the upadis, you follow the culture of them, but they're not you. Like Lord Chaitanya as a grihastha follows the dharma of a grihastha, though it's not him. Then when he's a sannyasi, he follows that. Right? Same with his associates. So you have to have the designations, otherwise how do you have interaction? How do you have expression? So because the impersonalists, they've had a problem that interaction has caused the stress, therefore they want a situation of no interaction. So that's why it's impersonal. So then they don't require any of these things. You don't require forms and qualities. If one argues that Brahman is undivided but has separate places which are endowed with upadis, this proposition is untenable. Right? It's undivided but separate places, but that means that's a division. You know, so that means within Brahman, you have an upadi, you have definitions, you know, like that. Since upadis, Jiva and Ishwara, move about, it's not possible for the part of Brahman endowed with upadis to move about also. Brahman is supposed to be immovable. Right? So, yeah, how does the Jiva move if Brahman is immovable? And at every moment, there would be difference in the location of Brahman endowed with upadis. Because it's always adjusting. Because if you're looking at it, it's all pervading, it's always moving around. So, yeah, oh no, it's in a particular place, but it's always moving. Right. If one argues that the whole of Brahman is covered by upadis, Brahman cannot be completely covered, because then it would not be called by the name uncovered Brahman. Because we're calling the upadis of Jiva and Ishwara as covered Brahman. And we're calling them, there's the uncovered Brahman. But if it's all pervading, because that's going to be the next step that they're going to say. You say, it's moving, and just a portion. It's not the whole portion is. Okay, but this portion is moving, so how do you, you know, oh, it's everywhere, but then what's uncovered? You know, like that. So it says, if one proposes that the upadis do not have their support in Brahman at all, then there would be no liberation for Jiva and Ishwara, since they would have no relationship with Brahman at any stage. Right? You couldn't get liberation, and that's the whole point. Start with that. But at the same time, as then they've always been like that, so then how are they a bifurcation of Brahman? Because they have no relationship to Brahman. So they have to have a relationship to Brahman to go back into Brahman. Right? So that's the problem, is whatever argument they use, it's still wrong, because they're using mundane arguments. Thus the doctrine of bifurcation Brahman has been defeated. So that's all the aspects like this. Right? Yeah. So that means all aspects, it means you may have some details here, but this aspects are there, is that much it just takes to defeat it. Mm-hmm. Right? So listen. Pratibimbavad that refuted. The theory of reflection of Brahman is then refuted. There can be no reflected image of Brahman as Ishwara and Jiva because an upadhi cannot have a relationship with something without qualities. Because something which is all-pervading cannot have difference of object and its reflection, since it encompasses everything. And something without limbs is invisible. Right? One, it's invisible because there's no limbs. It's all-pervading, so you can't have an object and a reflection, because that means then there's two things. That means a bifurcation. Right? We've already removed the bifurcation aspect. So that's what we're saying, oh, it's reflected. One can see a reflection of the sun which has qualities like form, which is limited and which has limbs on an upadhi like water, with distance between them. This cannot be said of Brahman, which has no qualities, is unlimited, and has no limbs. Because you say there's no limbs, but then they're saying it's bifurcated, so that's, you know, it's just, yeah. Just as we can see a reflection of the sky, which has similar qualities of being unlimited and without form and qualities. Okay, this must be a quote. Yeah, this is the...
Yeah.
What do you call it?
The,
yeah. So you should always do, when you see these things, put a little something there in brackets to say, so it's clear. Otherwise, we get through and then you go, hey, wait a minute. Just as we can see a reflection of the sky, which has similar qualities of being unlimited and without form and qualities, so we can see a reflection of Brahman, right? Just saying, well, you can see a reflection of the sky, which is similar qualities of being unlimited without form and qualities, but we can see that reflection, right, in the water, right? Yeah, in the pot. No, so then the Utra. No, we see the reflections of portions of light, planets and constellations limited by upadis, right? You see a cloud, you see the planets, the light, things like that. Not the sky. The sky is you can't see the sky. You can't see ether. Otherwise, one could also claim to see air, time, and space. Right? But you see. Quote, the reflection of Brahman is like a sound and its echo. End quote. That's their idea. That is also not appropriate since it becomes a different proposal. Thus, the theory of reflection is also insignificant. In the next Anucheta, Srila Jiva Goswami, accepting the upadis as real, gives more arguments against the Mayavadi doctrine. Because they're saying that these are illusion, there are no upadis. We're taking, no, these qualities exist. Yes?
It's like, some may say that the upadis are real, some say they are illusory. Whether they are real or illusory, it doesn't matter. Either way, your philosophy is wrong, that's all.
Okay, so take it for everything. Okay. So now we're taking it, if the upadis is real, then we'll still defeat it, right? Anucheta 38. If there is actual bifurcation of Brahman, that cannot be given up merely by knowledge of Jiva being none other than Brahman. If you say that the cause of Jiva being separate from Brahman is the power of Brahman itself, that is our view. Right, so you're saying that the Jiva is separated from Brahman, but it's the power of Brahman that separates it. So how can the Jiva itself liberate itself just by having that knowledge? Right? So it has to be by Brahman wanting to be, you know, not be bifurcated, that it could only stop. But then that means that then there's desires and all those qualities that they say don't exist. So, again, problem. Anucheta, Prakashita, from Jiva Toshini. Srila Jiva Goswami exposes further defects in accepting the upadis as empirically real. Footnote 9. When Jiva Goswami asks us to hypothetically consider the upadis as being real, he is referring to the Mayavad terms anavidyaka, empirically real, and avidyaka, apparently real. Texts 37 and 38 deal with the connection that the Jiva is anavidyaka, while text 39 refutes anavidyaka, and this is avidyaka postulate. These stem from the monastic view categorizing existence, satta, in a hierarchy of three levels from the truest to the falsest. So, empirically real means?
The vyavaharika means the practical world.
And the practical, okay. And the apparently?
Means the second and third level, which is mentioned already.
Oh, I see, okay. So, paramartika, absolute reality. On this level exists only non-dual Brahman, right? Because they always talk about that uncovered non-dual Brahman, which has no form, no qualities, no variety, no activities. In short, it is nothing. An opinion shared by the Buddhists. In contrast to such nihilistic and atheistic view, however, the Mayavadis do not admit this outright. They instead pay lip service to God by subordinating him to the next level of reality. Okay, so the Vyavaharika would be the same as?
Empirical.
As the Anavidyika. Okay, empirical reality. It is the public experience shared by all during day-to-day waking consciousness. Okay. And Pratibhashika. Apparent reality, experienced in dreams and illusions, like mistaking a snake for a rope in the dark. It is short-lived and private, like an illusion within an illusion. Okay, this is from His Grace Gopi Purana Dhanaprabhu's commentary. Okay, Purva Paksha. So now this will be their argument again. The monists hold that by becoming educated through the Shruti, oh no, this is Purvapaksha, us against them?
They're
this is theirs. Okay, so he's just explaining that. The monists hold that by becoming educated through the Shruti, the jiva becomes free from bondage to the upadis, right? Because he gains knowledge, and having knowledge, now he'll be Brahman covered by knowledge. So that brings them above those upadis and brings them up to the next level of Ishwara. Right? That is the meaning of the following Shruti statements according to them. Tattvam asi, thou art that. Tattvam asya divakyebhya jnana jnanam mokshasya sadhanam. The means to liberation is the knowledge arriving from dictums such as thou art that. So that must be that Shankara is saying that. The jiva is nothing but deluded Brahman. As soon as he understands this by hearing the Vedic canon, he becomes fully realized. He understands that Brahman is not far away from him, for he himself is Brahman. His only obstacle was ignorance, which is now removed by the Vedas. Of course, for this, the heart must be pure, for which Sripad Shankaracharya recommends a process called Sadhana Chatushtaya, or the fourfold practice. You don't tell what the fourfold practice is?
I didn't get it.
Oh, okay. Uttara. I think we had one other place where it mentioned it. I kind of remember in Vedanta Sutra.
In Vedanta Sutra, in the beginning of Vedanta Sutra, introduction part.
Yeah, it's there. Uttara. Srila Jiva Goswami counters this with the fact that even if one gets knowledge of oneness with Brahman, upadi, which is empirical reality, will not magically dissolve just by the sound of the Vedas. A man bound by chains will not become free just by meditating that his fetters are cut. A rabbit will not turn into an elephant just by meditating, I am an elephant, I am an elephant. Such an achievement is possible if the upadi was apparent, just as an intoxicated man may think himself president of the USA. But when he sobers up, he understands that he is just a simple office clerk. In the case of an empirical or real upadi, the solution is not so simple. Mere knowledge is not sufficient to give the jiva liberation from maya. If knowledge alone was sufficient, why do the scriptures recommend various austerities, penances, and rituals for one's purification? Right, because he's saying here is that you have to be pure, but then it's not the knowledge. The knowledge is dependent on the purity. So then again, it goes back to an upadi. You know, so the another example somewhere is that you can't clean, wash, you know, your hands of blood with blood. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premananda ki.